Part 2. A New Friendship Makes Good Progress. A sweet solemnity often possesses the mind whilst retracing past intercourse with departed friends. How much is this increased when they were such as lived and died in the Lord? The remembrance of former scenes and conversations with those who we believe are now enjoying the uninterrupted happiness of a better world fills the heart with pleasing sadness and animates the soul with the hopeful anticipation of a day when the glory of the Lord shall be revealed in the assembling of all His children together, never more to be separated. Whether they were rich or poor while on earth is a matter of trifling consequence. The valuable part of their character is that they are kings and priests unto God, and this is their true nobility. In the number of now departed believers, with whom I once loved to converse on the grace and glory of the kingdom of God, was the dairyman's daughter. About a week after the funeral, I went to visit the family at Blank, and in whose service the youngest sister had lived and died, and where Elizabeth was requested to remain for a short time in her stead. The house was a large and venerable mansion. It stood in a beautiful valley at the foot of a high hill. It was embowered in fine woods, which were interspersed in every direction with rising, falling, and swelling grounds. The manor house had evidently descended through a long line of ancestry from a distant period of time. The Gothic character of its original architecture was still preserved in the latticed windows, adorned with carved divisions and pillars of stonework. Several pointed terminations also in the construction of the roof, according to the custom of our forefathers, fully corresponded with the general features of the building. One end of the house was entirely clothed with the thick foliage of an immense ivy, which climbed beyond customary limits and embraced a lofty chimney up to its very summit. Such a tree seemed congenial to the walls that supported it, and conspired with the antique fashion of the place to carry imagination back to the days of our ancestors. As I approached, I was led to reflect on the lapse of ages and the successive generations of men, each in their turn occupying lands, houses, and domains, each in their turn also disappearing and leaving their inheritance to be enjoyed by others. David once observed the same and cried out, "Behold, thou hast made my days as an handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they are disquieted in vain. He heapeth up riches, and knoweth not who shall gather them. Happy would it be for the rich, if they more frequently meditated on the uncertainty of all their possessions, and the frail nature of every earthly tenure. Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever, and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Nevertheless, man, being in honor, abideth not. He is like the beasts that perish. This their way is their folly, yet their posterity approve their sayings. Like sheep they are laid in the grave. Death shall feed on them, and their beauty shall consume in the grave from their dwelling." As I advanced to the mansion, a pleasing kind of gloom overspread the front. It was occasioned by the shade of trees, and gave a characteristic effect to the ancient fabric. I instantly recollected that death had very recently visited the house, and that one of its present inhabitants was an affectionate mourner for a departed sister. There is a solemnity in the thought of a recent death, which will associate itself with the very walls from whence we are conscious that a soul has just taken its flight to eternity. After passing some time in conversation with the superiors of the family, in the course of which I was much gratified by hearing of the unremitted attention which the elder sister had paid to the younger during the illness of the latter, I received likewise other testimonies of the excellency of her general character and conduct in the house. I then took leave to request permission to see her, agreeably to the promise I had made at the funeral not many days before. I was shown into a parlor where I found her alone. She was in deep mourning. She had a calmness and serenity in her countenance which exceedingly struck me and impressed some idea of those attainments which a further acquaintance with her afterwards so much increased. She spoke of her sister. I had the satisfaction of finding that she had given very hopeful proofs of a change of heart before she died. The prayers and earnest exhortations of Elizabeth had been blessed to a happy effect. She described what had passed with such a mixture of sisterly affection and pious dependence on the mercy of God to sinners, as convinced me that her own heart was under the influence of pure and undefiled religion. She requested leave occasionally to correspond with me on serious subjects, stating that she needed much instruction. She hoped I would pardon the liberty which she had taken by introducing herself to my notice. She expressed a trust that the Lord would overrule both the death of her sister and the personal acquaintance with me that resulted from it to a present and future good, as it respected herself and also her parents, with whom she statedly lived, and to whom she expected to return in a few days. Finding that she was wanted in some household duty, I did not remain long with her, but left her with an assurance that I proposed to visit her parents very shortly. "Sir," said she, "I take it very kind that you have condescended to leave the company of the rich and converse with the poor. I wish I could have said more to you respecting my own state of mind. Perhaps I shall be able better another time. When you next visit me, instead of finding me in these noble walls, you will see me in a poor cottage. But I am happiest when there. Once more, sir, I thank you for your past kindness to me and mine, and may God in many ways bless you for it." I quitted the house with no small degree of satisfaction, in consequence of the new acquaintance which I had formed. I discovered traces of a cultivated as well as a spiritual mind. I felt that religious intercourse with those of low estate may be rendered eminently useful to others, whose outward station and advantages are far above their own. How often does it appear that God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty, and base things of the world and things which are despised hath God chosen, and things which are not to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in his presence. It was not unfrequently my custom, when my mind was filled with any interesting subject for meditation, to seek some spot where the beauties of natural prospect might help to form pleasing and useful associations. I therefore ascended gradually to the very summit of the hill adjoining the mansion where my visit had just been made. Here was placed an elevated sea mark. It was in the form of a triangular pyramid and built of stone. I sat down on the ground near it and looked at the surrounding prospect, which was distinguished for beauty and magnificence. It was a lofty station, commanding a complete circle of interesting objects to engage the spectator's attention. Southward the view was terminated by a long range of hills at about 6 miles distance. They met, to the westward, another chain of hills, of which the one whereon I sat formed a link, and the whole together nearly encompassed a rich and fruitful valley, filled with cornfields and pastures. Through this vale winded a small valley, and for many miles much cattle were feeding on its banks. Here and there lesser eminences arose in the valley, some covered with wood, others with corn or grass, and a few with heath or fern. One of these little hills was distinguished by a parish church at the top, presenting a striking feature in the landscape. Another of these elevations, situated in the center of the valley, was adorned with a venerable holly tree, which has grown there for ages. Its singular height and wide-spreading dimensions not only render it an object of curiosity to the traveler, but of daily usefulness to the pilot, as a mark visible from the sea whereby to direct his vessel safe into harbor. Villages, churches, country seats, farmhouses, and cottages were scattered over every part of the southern valley. In this direction also, at the foot of the hill where I was stationed, appeared the ancient mansion which I had just quitted, embellished with its woods, groves, and gardens. Southeastward I saw the open ocean, bounded only by the horizon. The sun shone and gilded the waves with a glittering light that sparkled in the most brilliant manner. More to the east, in continuation of that line of hills where I was placed, rose two downs, one beyond the other, both covered with sheep, and the sea just visible over the furthest of them as a terminating boundary. In this point, ships were seen, and some sailing, others at anchor. Here the little river, which watered the southern valley, finished its course, and ran through meadows into the sea in an eastward direction. On the north, the sea appeared like a noble river, varying from 3 to 7 miles in breadth between the banks of the opposite coast and those of the island which I inhabited. Immediately underneath me was a fine woody district of country, diversified by many pleasing objects. Distant towns were visible on the opposite shore. Numbers of ships occupied the sheltered station which this northern channel afforded them. The eye roamed with delight over an expanse of near and remote beauties, which alternately caught the observation and which harmonized together and produced a scene of peculiar interest. Westward, the hills followed each other, forming several intermediate and partial valleys in a kind of undulations like the waves of the sea, and bending to the south, completed the boundary of the larger valley before described, and to the southward of the hill on which I sat. In many instances the hills were cultivated with corn to their very summits, and seemed to defy the inclemency of the weather, which at these heights usually renders the ground incapable of bringing forth and ripening the crops of grain. One hill alone, the highest in elevation and about 10 miles to the southwestward, was enveloped in a cloud, which just permitted a dim and hazy sight of a signal post, a lighthouse, and an ancient chantry built on its summit. Amidst these numerous specimens of delightful scenery, I found a mount for contemplation, and here I indulged it. How much of the natural beauties of paradise still remain in the world, although its spiritual character has been so awfully defaced by sin. But when divine grace renews the heart of the fallen sinner, paradise is regained, and much of its beauty restored to the soul. As this prospect is compounded of hill and dale, land and sea, woods and plains, all sweetly blended together and relieving each other in the landscape, so do the gracious dispositions wrought in the soul produce a beauty and harmony of scene to which it was before a stranger. I looked towards the village in the plain below, where the dairyman's young daughter was buried. I retraced the simple solemnities of the funeral. I connected the principles and conduct of her sister with the present, probably happy state of her soul in the world of spirits, and was greatly impressed with a sense of the importance of family influence as a means of grace. That young woman, I thought, has been the conductor of not only a sister, but perhaps a father and mother also, to the true knowledge of God, and may by divine blessing become so to others. It is a glorious occupation to win souls to Christ, and guide them out of Egyptian bondage through the wilderness into the promised Canaan. Happy are the families who are walking hand in hand together as pilgrims towards the heavenly country. May the number of such be daily increased. Casting my eye over the numerous dwellings in the vales on my right and left, I could not help thinking how many of their inhabitants are ignorant of the ways of God and strangers to His grace. May this thought stimulate to activity and diligence in the cause of immortal souls. They are precious in God's sight. They ought to be so in ours. Some pointed and affecting observations to that effect recurred to my mind as having been made by the young person with whom I had just been conversing. Her mind appeared to be much impressed with the duty of speaking and acting for God while it is day, conscious that the night cometh when no man can work. Her laudable anxiety on this head was often testified to me afterwards both by letter and conversation. What she felt herself in respect to endeavors to do good, she happily communicated to others with whom she corresponded or conversed. Time would not permit my continuing so long in the enjoyment of these meditations on this lovely mount of enjoyment as my heart desired. On my return home, I wrote a few lines to the dairyman's daughter, chiefly dictated by the train of thought which had occupied my mind while I sat on the hill. On the next Sunday evening, I received her reply, of which the transcript The following is a transcript. Sunday. Reverend Sir, I am this day deprived of an opportunity of attending the house of God to worship Him. But glory be to His name, He is not confined to time or place. I feel Him present with me where I am, and His presence makes my paradise, and for where He is heaven. I pray God that a double portion of His grace and Holy Spirit may rest upon you this day, that His blessings may attend all your faithful labors, and that you may find the truth of His words assuring us that wherever we assemble together in His name, there He is in the midst to bless every waiting soul. How precious are all His promises! We ought never to doubt the truth of His word. For He will never deceive us if we go on in faith, always expecting to receive what His goodness waits to give. Dear sir, I have felt it very consoling to read your kind letter today. I feel thankful to God for ministers in our church who love and fear His name. There it is where the people in general look for salvation, and there may they ever find it for Jesus' sake. May His word, spoken by you, His chosen vessel of grace, be made spirit and life to their dead souls. May it come from you as an instrument in the hands of God, as sharp arrows from a strong archer, and strike a death blow to all their sins. How I long to see the arrows of conviction fasten on the minds of those that are hearers of the word and not doers. O, sir, be ambitious for the glory of God and the salvation of souls. It will add luster to your crown in glory, as well as to your present joy and peace. We should be willing to spend and be spent in His service, saying, Lord, may Thy will be done by me on earth, even as it is by the angels in heaven. so you may expect to see his face with joy, and say, Here am I, Lord, and all the souls thou hast given me. It seems wonderful that we should neglect any opportunity of doing good, when there is, if it be done from love to God and his creatures, a present reward of grace, in reflecting that we are using the talents committed to our care according to the power and ability which we receive from him. God requires not what he has not promised to give. But when we look back and reflect that there have been opportunities in which we have neglected to take up our cross and speak and act for God, what a dejection of mind we feel. We are then justly filled with shame. Conscious of being ashamed of Christ, we cannot come with that holy boldness to a throne of grace, nor feel that free access when we make our supplications. We are commanded to provoke one another to love and good works, and where two are agreed together in the things of God, they may say, And if our fellowship below in Jesus is so sweet, what heights of rapture shall we know when round the throne we meet? Sir, I hope Mrs. Blank and you are both of one heart and one mind. Then you will sweetly agree in all things that make for your present and eternal happiness. Christ sent his disciples out, not singly but two and two, that they might comfort and help each other in those ways and works which their Lord commanded them to pursue. It has been my lot to have been alone the greatest part of the time that I have known the ways of God. I therefore find it such a treat to my soul when I can meet with anyone who loves to talk of the goodness and love of God and all his gracious dealings. What a comfortable reflection to think of spending a whole eternity in that delightful employment. To tell to listening angels his love, immense, unsearchable. Dear sir, I thank you for your kindness and condescension in leaving those that are of high rank and birth in the world to converse with me, who am but a servant here below. But when I consider what a high calling, what honor and dignity God has conferred upon me to be called his child, to be born of his Spirit, made an heir of glory and joint heir with Christ, how humble and circumspect should I be in all my ways as a dutiful and loving child to an affectionate and loving father. When I seriously consider these things, it fills me with love and gratitude to God, and I do not wish for any higher station nor envy the rich. I rather pity them if they are not good as well as great. My blessed Lord was pleased to appear in the form of a servant, and I long to be like him. I did not feel in so happy a frame of conversation that day, nor yet that liberty to explain my thoughts which I sometimes do. The fault must have been all in myself, for there was nothing in you but what seemed to evidence a Christian spirit, temper, and disposition. I very much wished for an opportunity to converse with you. I feel very thankful to God that you do take up the cross and despise the shame. If you are found faithful, you will soon sit down with him in glory. I have written to the Reverend Mr. Blank to thank him for permitting you to perform the burial service at Blank over my dear departed sister, and to tell him of the kind way in which you consented to do it. I should mention that your manner of reading the service on that day had a considerable effect on the hearers. Pray excuse all faults and correct my errors. I expect in a few days to return home to my parents' house. We shall rejoice to see you there. From your humble servant in Christ, E. W. It was impossible to view such a correspondent with indifference. I had just returned from a little cottage assembly, where on Sunday evenings I sometimes went to instruct a few poor families in one of the hamlets belonging to my parish. I read the letter and closed the day with thanksgiving to God for thus enabling those who fear his name to build up each other in fear and love. Of old time, they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name. That book of remembrance is not yet closed.